Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Education Committee to order. It is Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Good morning. Members present today are Representative Elam, Representative Schwanke, Representative Underwood, Representative Eichheit, Co-Chair Story, and myself, Co-Chair Himshute. We have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to remind members to silence your cell phones. We're in the Betty Davis Committee Room, Room 106, in the State Capitol Building in Juneau, Alaska. And the documents for today's meeting have been distributed to members, are available on the table outside the door, and they are on basis. We are also joined by Representative Dybert at 8:04. I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Kale Brown, and our moderator from the Juneau LIO, Chloe Miller, and, of course, our very capable committee aides, Ella Lubin and Tammy Smith, for helping with today's meeting. On today's agenda, we have several items, including a short presentation from the Department of Education and Early Development on Carl Perkins funding, a joint presentation with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and Department of Education and Early Development on career guides, and a brief presentation from the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, and then we'll conclude by continuing our discussion on House Bill 358. I want to note that we pulled this meeting together in the span of less than a week, so I'm grateful to everybody who jumped in and said they could manage to be with us today. And I also want to thank our committee aides for effort to get this off the ground today. So appreciate everyone and their flexibility and willingness to be with us today. So we're going to start. I would like to welcome Brad Billings and Deputy Director Kelly Manning from the Department of Education and Early Development. Please come forward, introduce yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Kelly Manning, Deputy Director for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence.
And I'm Brad Billings. I'm the Administrator for Career and Technical Education at the Department of Education and Early Development.
We're going to share today on our Alaska Carl Perkins program funding available for a number of CTE programs around the state. You're familiar with our mission, vision, and purpose. We are highlighting that our one of our shared priorities is to increase career, technical, and culturally relevant education to meet student workforce needs. So our work around CTE, career technical ed, is outlined with our strategic priorities for Alaska's Education Challenge. So for federal Carl Perkins, there's approximately $1.4 billion distributed annually to states via formula. These CTE federal funds, the purpose is to develop and improve career and technical education offerings. Funding is allocated to both secondary and post-secondary institutions, with the majority of funding in the state going to districts for CTE programs. Funds are distributed based on comprehensive local needs assessments that are conducted every other year and distributed on a 27-month basis, so funding can carry over. And they were recently moved to the Department of Labor for distribution through the United States Department of Labor Payment Management System, and those are paid on a reimbursement basis for services.
So to get into the allocation for Alaska. So for this year, we received just over $5.9 million, and I'm just going to walk through quickly how that money is used and distributed. So the Perkins Law requires that 85% of that money be distributed to sub-grantees, and that's made up of school districts and then post-secondary institutions. And so this year, 45 school districts applied for the funds. 22 of our smaller districts, they receive a minimum allocation of $20,000, and we set that. I think Perkins requires $15,000. We've increased that by five, so $20,000 for 22 of our districts. And then the other districts receive an allocation based on demographics up to just over $1.4 million for our largest Anchorage school district. And then we have four post-secondary institutions. They're all based at the University of Alaska at different campuses there, and they each receive a grant of $150,000 for a three-year cycle.
Can we pause for just – is it okay to do questions as you're going?
Okay, absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
Co-Chair Story has a question.
Yes, thank you, and it actually has to do with the previous page when you said – page 4, based on comprehensive local needs assessments that are done every 2 years. It would be great to have a picture of, you know, what that looks like. And then when you said it was recently moved to the Department of Labor, the payment management system, is that part of the federal Department of Education downsizing and they're switching to Department of Labor? Just curious.
Yes, for the record, Kelly Manning to co-chair Story. Yes, that move was part of the federal redistribution of education funding to different programs. And Brad can speak to the efficacy of that and how that's been going.
Yeah, it was actually quite smooth. It took us by surprise. I think they announced in maybe September that they would do it 2 months later, and the following week they said it was done. We have some sharp folks in our admin services there at the Department of Ed who got right on it, made sure that the bank accounts lined up and whatnot. So those are actually funds that we request reimbursement for, so we draw that down after we've paid sub-grantees for their Perkins programs.
Thank you.
And follow up
just about the local needs assessment. What is, yeah. Give me a picture of what that means and looks like, please.
Yeah. So to co-chair Story, it's a process where each school district is going through and doing some planning on their programs, and they're talking about equity, they're talking about the strength of their staffing, they're talking about you know, the programs of study that we've talked about. Is it a robust program of study? So they go through a process, they fill out a report form that they then submit to us. We'd be happy to share some of those needs assessments with you if you'd like.
Through the chair.
Follow.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Himshut. So, yes, very much through the chair. I would like to see one of those, and I'm assuming you mean they're doing assessments of their career tech programs that they have, and are students taking them? Have they had to switch course to go to another field? I'm assuming that's what it looks like.
Yes, through the chair to Co-Chair Story. That's correct. So they're looking at performance data as one of the requirements of their students.
Thank you.
Yep.
I had one question as well along those same lines with the every 2 years, and I'm thinking of some small rural districts, some remote districts. Who does this? Is this the superintendent? Who fills or who does the needs assessment? And then does that would cultural arts fit within Carl Perkins funding?
To Chair Himshut, who does it? It's often led by a district CTE director or staff member. It involves CTE instructors. In Perkins, there's an advisory committee. It's a formal body that includes local industry. It includes parents. There's a list of required individuals who are participating in that. And that CLNA is done in partnership, at least consultation, and other districts are doing more than that with that advisory committee. And then repeat.
Would cultural arts fall under Perkins funding? So carving, skin sewing, are those?
Yeah, we've
so eligible?
We're trying to create so Carl Perkins focuses on high need, high demand, high skill, high wage occupations. And in Alaska, we're very intentional about honoring we have a couple of names for it. We'll call it cultural entrepreneurship. And that could be something that falls under the arts and the cultural artwork. It could be local government in working for a tribal organization or a local corporation. So it does include that. It's we kind of have to talk about it a little differently, but we're trying to honor that for sure.
Thank you. I think we can go on.
And so then those first two categories then, the secondary and post-secondary grants, that's at least 85% of our Perkins money that the state gets. These then are how we spend the remaining funds. We have required grants under the law, staff professional development, that's awarded. We have six of them to usually school districts. It might be a university campus that may be training staff. Non-traditional occupation grants, which are underrepresented gender in a certain occupation. So that would be maybe females in welding, males in health occupations, maybe nursing, something like that. We have three of those currently, and then we're required to partner with another state institution on workforce development, and so our partner right now is the Department of Corrections. That's a small grant that they can use then for workforce development with their incarcerated individuals. 5% of that money we're allowed to keep for what's called administrative costs. That's usually staffing for us. The state actually matches that with an additional $295,000. And then just given our staffing at the Department of Ed right now, the department is kicking in additional money to cover those administrative activities. And then lastly then is what's called leadership activities. And this is up to 10%. Usually we're taking about 8% for this. Honestly, probably the most important activity we're using with these funds or we're funding with these dollars is two conferences to gather statewide. And so that's a fall professional development conference sponsored by the Alaska Career and Technical Education Society. We're a partner. Department of Labor is a partner. The university is a partner on that conference. And then DEED hosts a conference in February, our Perkins basically launch conference for each year. And so that's a leadership activity. We're also providing support to our six student organizations to support their conferences where they're gathering students for competitions. And then just some partners, we provide some funding. It's minor, but to the AWIB, the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, some other ACPE to support ACCESS, the Career Information System, et cetera.
Sorry, we do have another question.
Yeah.
Co-Chair Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute. Through the chair, I'm looking at the item Alaska Department of Corrections Workforce Development at the $25,000. I know other states have really been trying to put more money into workforce development in the correction system. Mm-hmm. They have found it's really paid dividends when people leave for reentry and they getting a more current job. And again, helping them not to reoffend, but be successful. And of course, having an income is just really crucial. Has this amount of money with the corrections, you said it was minimal. If there's a Carl Perkins increase in funds, and I don't know the last time that's happened, is that something that, who would make that decision to put more money into that category?
Yeah, to Co-Chair Story through the chair. So that's a. I don't know if it's a ceiling. We can spend up to $100,000 for partnering with state institutions. That was increased. I think we were doing maybe 10. That was increased maybe 4 years ago to the $30,000 amount. It's honestly an amount that falls kind of in a weird space because it's a small enough amount that sometimes. It requires more attention than it's worth. Maybe I shouldn't say that out loud, but then also it's something that can add value to, you know, if you have a program in place. We are considering partnering with Juvenile Justice as another state institution for that grant. So,
follow-up? Through the chair, then to be clear, it's which board makes that decision? You make that decision in the Department of Labor?
The last decision was made by two commissioners, yes. The Commissioner of Corrections and the Commissioner of the Department of Education, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute. Mr. Billings, I'm kind of curious about the Career and Technical Student Organization support line on here. Mm-hmm. Would that include things like the FFA, like mechanical career track opportunities that they offer? Could you explain what that grant looks like?
So to Member Schwanke through the chair. So we use approximately $25,000 of that to provide a leadership conference in the fall for student leaders of those six CTSOs. The remaining $35,000, $40,000 is specifically for venue costs related to their spring competition. In addition to this Perkins money, there is state money that's given to CTSOs that could be used for the purposes that you brought up.
Follow up? Could you describe a little bit about the CTSOs? I've not heard of them, and I'm kind of curious. Obviously, there's a lot of school districts, but not one for each. So.
Yeah, so Alaska has six CTSOs. The familiar one that you've probably heard of is Future Farmers of America, Business Professionals of America. HOSA is Health Occupations. Our biggest one is honestly Ed Rising. They have the biggest presence. And then Skills USA is the fifth. And they're organized, they're affiliated with a national model. They then have a state-level organization, and then local chapters are formed in school districts to support students.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. I think we can move. Oh, nope. Representative Elam.
Thank you. The conference that you're talking about, isn't that like going on right now or real close to now? Can you speak more about kind of what that conference is, what that looks like?
Representative Elam, through the chair. So conferences are going on right now. I believe that the Skills USA conference is this week. And Skills USA is partnering with BPA and FCCLA. So they've combined forces. And what this is a conference where they organize competitions. You know, so I think we paid for a testing mechanism for welding. And so they'll have competitions where students are actually at the conference in Anchorage, and they're demonstrating their welding skills. There's public speaking. There's a variety of different student competitions that go on.
Thank you. It was quite the extensive list whenever I was looking through it all. Quite impressive.
Thank you for that. And just as a reminder, if there are any acronyms, if you could explain what those are. And that conference that's happening goes between South Central and Juneau, right? Isn't there sometimes a CTE conference with students here in Juneau?
Yes. So Co-Chair Himshoot, Ed Rising is really good at moving their conference annually between Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Juneau. Skills USA, I think, moved it between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and maybe there was a Matsu component there. But usually it's Anchorage, just because that's the hub that works.
I would just invite you, if at any point during the legislative session there's a conference happening in Juneau, I think we would like to know about it. And you know, it's hard to break free, but I think it would fill the bucket a little for us to go out and see something like that. So, okay, let's continue.
Me as well. I've never attended a state conference, and I'll just give a shout out to Future Farmers of America. They are, you've seen probably the students with their jackets and their badges, and every year they would schedule a meeting with me when their students were in town, and then on their way into the building they would swing by the commissioner's office, and inevitably, you know, the commissioner would invite students in with their jackets on, and I would get a call that said, you know, your meeting's canceled, come down to my office, here's where the meeting's at. So.
We know our rank.
Yeah, we do. So just allowable expenses, honestly, with Carl Perkins, it's broad. This is not an exclusive list, but any kind of program development, building curriculum and instruction, professional development, training of staff, sending someone to a welding, you know, to become a welding instructor, something like that. And then student support, obviously looking at equity, making sure that students have equal access to programs, and if there's any fees or any kind of impediment, Carl Perkins funds can be used for that as well. It's really at the discretion of the school district. So again, you've seen this slide already. I'm going to circle back to it. This is the product that Perkins is delivering to students. It's a program of study. It's based on stackable courses that are getting technical. So it's not just kind of explore what you want to do. It's not the wood shop that I took in seventh grade. It's getting into cabinet making, construction. It's linking to standards, the academic, technical, and employability standards. It involves dual credit, you know, usually with the university system. And then post-secondary credentials or certifications. And then involving some sort of work-based learning. Here's a sample of a healthcare program of study that is in Lower Kuskokwim School District. Their partnership with the local hospital there, providing for summer high school interns, is just a strong program. It's exciting. I talked to the director in that district, and he says right now he's having trouble hiring an instructor who can teach the medical terminology in anatomy and physiology. So just that just kind of points to the staffing issues. We're a bit shallow in our smaller rural districts, and so sometimes the staffing, you have to build a program around what the staff can deliver.
All right. We've had this question come up around career and technical education deserts, and this is something that we're interpreting to mean districts or locations where career and technical education is not being delivered. And the challenge that we have at the department is that we don't have a statewide data collection of all career and technical education programming that occurs in every district. And what we have is data collections on Perkins, reporting from districts on how they're using those funds. But as, you know, on that slide where we were showing the breakouts, you know, the smaller districts that are using it, there, many of them are getting that minimum allocation of $20,000. That's not covering the bulk of what they're doing in career and technical ed. So we have information on what they're doing with Perkins. We do not have a data collection on how the CTE factor in the formula is being used by districts. And we don't have just like a way to identify all of the courses, projects, or activities. So we don't really have a way to identify CTE deserts per se. But we did pull together some information, and Brad's going to speak to like what we do know about where things are happening and where certain programs maybe aren't being delivered that we know of through the Perkins funding. But I just want to be clear that that's a limited picture of what's happening with CTE, because we don't have a data collection that tells us fully what every district is doing in CTE across their different funding sources.
I'm going to stop for just a second there, because this question of deserts, we did a little work in my office, and I am grateful every year for the Ted Stevens internship program. I have an excellent intern, and he constructed, and these are posted on BASIS. There's not a lot of context provided on the BASIS post, and we might add to that to explain. We got information from Deed, and he created a series of maps. Each map shows which programs are or where the particular program is provided, and then he did a composite map, and it resulted in, I'm using a prop, but I guess it's okay in committee. It resulted in a couple of places where we see no programs are offered. And when I looked through it last night, there were some things in Sitka, you know, I was looking for my home district, and I was like, okay, I think we can upgrade this and make it more accurate, because certain things that I know are happening in Sitka aren't here, and certain things that I didn't know were happening are located in Sitka. So I think we need to tighten up the data, but this visual really helped me. Mm-hmm. So we did post it on BASIS, and you guys all have it, and we saw a couple of regions where, but is it, you know, is it that they're not reporting what they're doing, or is it that the report doesn't match these categories? So, and of course, cultural arts is not represented here. So I think it's imperfect, but for me, it really helped to see this visually. So just for the awareness of the committee, we did put it on BASIS so everybody else can have a look at it too. Representative Elam?
I just wanted to express appreciation for your office and your staff helping out with that, because that was actually a very, very helpful piece of information. So thank you.
Ted Stevens internship program, yes. Highly recommend. Co-chair Story?
Thank you, Co-chair Hemshoot. I found that really helpful too, and I'm hoping it is just the beginning of collaboration. Like one thing I think would be great for the department to do, or we could request it ourselves. Oftentimes the Alaska Council of School Administrators, you can contact them and say, can you run a brief survey, you know, of your through your superintendents, usually what CTE are you offering, what are the courses? I mean, obviously someone has to compile it and put it together, but to share it with the department, and I don't know, Mr. Billings, is it Billings?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, if that, I mean, I know you have certain tasks that you're doing all the time. I don't know how helpful you would find that, but to me, this is where we have the collaboration between the different levels of policy that affect our students. And if we're going to be able to be working with industry and aligning workforce and our middle school and high school programs, I just think it'd be really important that we continue on. And I'm not sure of the next steps on that, but hopefully we'll have some communication on what the department thinks they might want to do and what we can do and maybe what ACSA can do, because I truly think legislators are longing for a really accurate picture of where we have our CTE deserts and the strong programs that we do have going and how can we support them. Thank you.
And we do have the maps available to project if we want to do that maybe after this. What I was struggling with was these categories, they're super comprehensive and high level, but I was like, I know we do small engine repair in Sitka. Where does that fit? Which of these categories? Yeah. So maybe it's on the next slide.
Yeah, I was going to address that exactly. So I'll jump right there to Co-Chair Hemshoot. So if you look there, transportation, distribution, and logistics. That is that upper left, the dark blue. If you look at the chart over on the right, you can see vertically which columns have the most dots, which means the most districts have students taking a course in this area. And so that's where small engines would land. And so that's why that's highly represented. So that would be the third column from the right. Is transportation, distribution, logistics, small engines. Another big performer for us is manufacturing, and that manufacturing includes welding, fabrication, and like cabinet making is included there. And so that's, I think, why we're highly represented there. The biggest column there on the far left is... That's it, architecture and construction. So that's going to be construction trades. That's the second column, the light blue. And then we also have a large representation in health field, health careers. And so this just gives you kind of an indication of what are the career clusters, is what we call these, that our districts are choosing to focus in, and we're highly represented. And then if you want to look vertically at the chart, you can see which districts are covering most of the 16 clusters. We have two clusters that we don't have any representation in, but the other 14, for example, Anchorage is offering, you know, all of those 14. Fairbanks is all but one. Kenai School District is representing all of the clusters. Matsu School District, all of the clusters. Jumping down to Yukon Koyukuk, there at the bottom, they have representation in most of the clusters, but one. So this is like this to me is exciting data. This chart is about students taking courses for the 24-25 school year. We have another chart that has concentrators within a district, which there aren't as many dots, but that's a more rigorous standard that we're applying that we could make maps.
What the dots kind of show me is that our rural districts don't. And again, if we added cultural arts in, mm-hmm. I think I'm not sure where that would go. Maybe we add a column, but I think that would show up more for rural districts. But also, I guess my question is who decides? How is this matched to what Alaska's workforce needs are? Does the Department of Labor say this is what the jobs that we have the greatest need in, and then the department says, okay, districts, we're going to help you? Or does the district say, here's what we're able to do. We have woodworking equipment, so we're going to offer woodworking, which would, I think, be under manufacturing or something.
Yes.
Yeah. So, or we have a hospital nearby who's willing to partner with us, so mm-hmm. now we're going to do healthcare. So it feels it's rather, I'm making a leap here, that this is driven by what can we do versus what do we need to do. So is this informed by the Department of Labor and then kind of driven by the need in Alaska, or is it what districts, you know, we've had woodworking equipment since 1980 and we're going to use that. So how are the decisions made as to where these dots are?
Co-Chair Hemshoot, it's yes, yes, and both. We follow the lead of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. They designate high-demand clusters or job fields, and then we match that in reaching out to districts and say, I think right now we have 9 areas where we're following the lead of AWIB, and then also we're adding, I think, education to that. So that's definitely something that drives the focus. And then, secondly, it is, like I said, just with shallow staffing, you're delivering sometimes, the smaller rural district is delivering what they have the staff to deliver. And it, you know, I'll stop there.
So I guess I'll follow up my own question with there is a bill in the works for improved data sharing. Is there any data barrier from the department? When you say AWIB advises you, that's a board saying, here are the jobs we need now, here are the jobs we think we're going to need. Is there any gap in the data? And then is there any incentive to districts? If you hear from AWIB, we need thousands more teachers, thousands more nurses. Do you then give weight to districts with those programs, or do you incentivize districts to create those programs? Lots of questions there.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So currently we don't incentivize or disincentivize through any kind of grant amounts. It's more a softer training approach. And so that's something we're focused on at our February meeting. For example, the last meeting we had someone come in and present on the Alaska, the Workforce Futures Plan, which is something that the Department of Labor has put together in partnership with industry representatives. And so we're going through that and we're saying, okay, this is what they're identifying, and here's what you can be doing as districts. But no, there's no penalty at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Elam.
Thank you. This is actually a lot of good information on there, and so I appreciate that. I noticed that information technology, that's my background, right? Yeah. So kind of zoom in sometimes on those things. Nine groups are represented there that have offerings. Anchorage, Fairbanks, the list goes down. Why do you suppose there's only nine out of all of this list, you know, where you have others that are in the 20s and stuff? Because those are highly competitive, needed positions that you can do remote.
Through the chair to Representative Elam, I think one of the things to just keep in mind with this map is that it's representing where they're using CTE funding to support those programs. So this represents which nine districts are using their CTE funding in that area, but not necessarily a holistic picture of information technology provided in those districts. So it probably more than anything reflects how are they prioritizing the use of their CTE funds versus whether or not they're actually providing that programming.
Okay, Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, through the co-chair. Just there's a note that says 10 districts don't receive Perkins funding. Can you expand a little bit on that? Are these districts that haven't applied for a number of years? Is there a reason why they're not in there?
Yeah, Representative Schwanke, through the chair. I think that's exactly it. These 10 districts are smaller districts, so they're probably eligible for the minimum of $20,000. And so it's sometimes a question of is the juice worth the squeeze, right? That they have other options, or you know they're wearing multiple hats, and so you know they're deciding for whatever reason not to apply. I did talk to one superintendent, and he indicated, you know, we just don't have high school students, and so I can't in good faith take money meant maybe for high school programs. I might as well leave it for other districts. That was one.
Would those districts be sending kids to like a variable term program or something?
They could be, yeah. So they could be partnering with Excel Alaska, for example, or, yeah, they could
CTE,
be.
CTE, and yes. So the district, but wouldn't the district, I'm jumping in, I'm sorry,
it's
wouldn't
okay.
The district take the $20,000 to help with transportation then, or?
Perkins requires some significant reporting. So, for example, all these dots come from them registering courses and declaring with us every summer what each individual student is doing. So there is a burden of reporting here that I wouldn't judge. But, yes, I think what you're considering.
Burden of reporting is sometimes called accountability.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just clarifying.
From your mouth to God's ears, yes.
Thank you, Rip Himshute, for that comment. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Co-chair Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Himshute. Through the chair, I'm just looking at the chart. And I appreciate Director Manning, your explanation of that, because I noticed Gustavus is not on here, and that's one of my school districts, and I know they have a CTE staff person who very much with middle school and high school is doing career tech. But I am going to talk to them a little bit to find out. And then, of course, the whole Chatham district, which is Gustavus, is a part. And I noticed that we did Kluckwan. And when I think about high school, I think about CTE so much in middle school, too,
yes.
Because that really certainly starts kids' interests. But we have Angoon. We have the whole Chatham district. I do not see them represented on the chart here. And I just I don't know at what part the department follows up, just because that's one of your missions, your goals is, you know, helping with career tech, so you're checking in with those districts. I don't know who does that to see how is your CT offerings going, and finding out which ones are using variable term. And I don't know, again, the oftentimes I know the Alaska Associations of School Boards listening to these discussions, and I actually forwarded just the information for today because I know they're very much interested in career tech too, and I just think all of these groups who support our students working together is really important. And I wanted to comment that Trends Magazine I find so helpful that they, one time a year, I think it usually is, that they put out what are the high demand fields, and I don't know, and that's, you know very much about that. Magazine, and that's helpful information. And I was going to ask through the chair, what do you have, what issue that is this year, the Trends Magazine about the high demand fields, or the most recent issue? I think that'd be helpful for the committee to have, and we could download it even on our basis so people can see what the high demand occupations are in the state of Alaska.
That was a comment.
A question through the chair to find out, do you know, have the recent Trends Magazine that highlights those, that information?
Yes, so two representative story. This is featured at the fall conference every year, bringing in the statisticians from the Department of Labor. I'll defer that to the Department of Labor because that's really their, like they get the credit for getting that information out there and for us to respond to.
So just this is our composite map of all the programs. And, again, this is a work in progress. He created this yesterday, literally yesterday. Yeah. If we were to add in the variable term programs that kids travel to, we might be able to fill in some of these blank spots. That's the idea, right?
So Representative Hemshoot, that's the issue. So, like, you are spot on in saying we need better data on what's actually going on more broadly. And we've been wrestling with this for 2 years at least. Prior to that, there was really a policy position that we weren't going to gather data on what districts are doing with the money in the funding formula. So that 1.5% factor, we weren't following up on that for a variety of reasons. Like, we need to be following up on that to have a better sense of what's going on. The question is, how do we do it in a way that's sustainable? It's legitimate data, and we're not just piling on the districts, because this is going to require the districts to sit down and really dig in and communicate the details of what they're providing.
I'm already concerned. You know, we keep saying less admin, less admin, less
yeah.
admin.
Yeah.
And now we're saying, well, that 1.5 that you've always just kind of used, now we need to know this, this, and this. That's who does that reporting.
Right.
That will be admin. So we just need to be clear. Representative Eichheit.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshoot. Through the Co-Chair, one of the things that I find very interesting on this grid, a place I haven't been, but it's high on my list, is Sitka, beautiful Sitka. And I noticed Sitka School District has six programs, and Mount Edgecombe only has one. And so I'm just curious about that because, you know, the state operates Mount Edgecombe. I would think there might be some capacity in the state to help support programs. You know, it draws students from all over the state, and it seems like a opportunity. So I don't know if Mount Edgecombe partners with Sitka School District. So just can you just explain that for an outsider?
Through the chair to Representative Eichheit. Again, this is a reflection of how they're using their CTE funds. So we do know
the purpose funds.
I'm sorry, they're Perkins CTE funds. Thank you. And so we do know that they're offering more than the one program that's listed here. This is representing what they use their Perkins funds for. So we know, for example, at our state board meeting, the superintendent spoke about students participating in the Educators Rising program. So they are participating in more CTE. They're just using their CTE funds in that one area.
Can't help myself. I will say that this would have looked different a year or two ago. And so there have been some changes at the school and not all positive, but we are working on it. And there are issues with timing, scheduling. So where you might look for partnership between the districts, some of that was happening and has now stopped, but might come back. And a lot of it had to do with timing of the school day, transportation. There was a key educator through UAS who provided a lot of the programming for EDGECOM, and I'm not sure if that was ever Perkins supported. So, there are limitations to what we're seeing here, for sure. So, okay, we need to finish up in the next couple of minutes if possible.
So I guess if I were speaking to deserts, I would say it's about capacity in small rural districts, and it's about staffing. So resources, demand, economies of scale that maybe some of the small rural districts struggle with. And so just two ideas on how to address this. And you just gave an example of collaboration between Mount Edgecombe and Sitka School District. The first is this horizontal collaboration among districts. So districts sharing resources, the whole collaborative model of Bristol Bay Regional Career and Tech Ed. That's like gold here, that we got to do it together. This idea of the short-term residency intensive program that you've already mentioned, partnering among or within different districts. So that's the first one, is horizontal. The second, then, is the vertical partnership. I'll stick with the example of Mount Edgecombe High School. They take their Perkins allocation, which I'm pulling it out of the air, maybe $50,000, and they take that money and they pass it directly over to the University of Alaska Southeast there in Sitka to host and provide their welding program. And then they're kicking in a bunch more money on top of that. So it's not paying for everything. So this is Mount Edgecombe who's partnering with the local university campus. And so this idea of the vertical collaboration, partnering with Department of Labor programs, AvTech, partnering with the University of Alaska system, local industry, employer training, tribal organizations, and Native corporations. I think there's an opportunity to partner there. I know that the Bristol Bay Native Corporation is a big partner with the Bristol Bay Career and Technical Education Program.
Okay. I see a lot of innovation in our state right now around this, and so this really helps to understand the Perkins part of that. Mm-hmm. And what some of the limitations are on the program, but also some of the opportunities it's providing. So thank you very much for that. If there are no additional questions on this, you guys are going to be here, so we can come back to you. I'd like to thank Mr. Billings and Deputy Director Manning for your presentation this morning. And now we're going to welcome Dirk Kraft, who is on Teams today. He's the Executive Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And thank you very much for your time this morning and for your willingness to present. We don't have your presentation up just yet. We're going to do a really quick at ease. All right, we're back on record. So once again, Director Kraft, thank you for being with us today. And if you could put your name on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute, Co-Chair Story, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dirk Kraft. I serve as Executive Director of the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And with me today, I also have Sheena Marcel, who is a program coordinator for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board for one of our state apprenticeship and expansion formula federal grants.
And Director Kraft, do you want to take questions as you go or have them held to the end? We're going to spend about 15 minutes on this presentation.
Okay. Whatever you prefer, then I can move through kind of quickly and we can hold questions and then that might be more efficient.
Okay, if the members could be ready to scroll back if needed. Okay, thank you, Director Kraft. We are all yours.
Can we move to the next slide? So AWIB serves as the lead planning and coordinating entity for Alaska's public workforce and development system. We have a 32-member board that consists of business and industry members, members from the private sector, vocational education, secondary and post-secondary education, organized labor, and some other seats. And we provide policy oversight of state and federally funded job training and vocational education programs. There's approximately 570 federally designated workforce boards across the country. Alaska has one board that serves as both the statewide board and the local board. This was established by administrative order in 2001. And it's served Alaska pretty well over the years. There's a handful of states that also have this model. Those federal funds have been dwindling over the years, and it's allowed us to be more operationally efficient. If we can go to the next slide. So as I mentioned, we have several state and federal programs we administer. For FY26, it's approximately $25 million in state and federal grants. We administer directly 9 out of the 12 current TVEP recipients, and our state training and education employment STEP grants are awarded by a competitive process every year. We announce in early February and then gather those applications by the end of April and approve them in May. We also apply for and receive federal workforce grants when they become available. Some examples of those are SAFE 3, that State Apprenticeship Expansion Formula grant, and our SAFE 2 State Apprenticeship Expansion Formula competitive grant. That was a competitive grant where we are awarded funds with two other states, and we have been administering that jointly with DEED. And can we go to the next slide? So CT in Alaska, when we talk career pathways, AWIB serves as a system alignment entity. So Career Pathways to us is a system. It's not just one program or a series of programs. It's a connected system from school to training to employment and to career advancement. And that requires alignment across education, workforce, and industry. And next slide. And we saw some examples, and I know the next presentation is going to talk a little bit about this, but some examples of some of those CT education and partnerships include, you know, our state public system in Anchorage, DEED, Department of Labor, University, and then some core training providers we have in the state, AvTech, our regional training centers, the TVEP recipients, and a host of others on our approved eligible training provider list, and then some other short-term training providers in the state. And next slide. So in October 2023, AWIB convened industry leaders, educators, workforce partners around the state to develop some common goals around workforce development. And following that convening, we conducted hundreds of surveys, forums, and interviews to refine that stakeholder input we received around some common workforce goals. And that led to the adoption of the Alaska Workforce Future Report you see pictured here, and that was mentioned in the previous presentation. And one of the things we heard a lot, it was a very valuable convening, and it's led to a lot of good work. And one of the things that was brought up is just how easy is it to consistently fill jobs in Alaska? 0% of all of our surveys, the people at the convening said it was easy in Alaska. it's a challenge, and there's a cost to that. There's a cost to vacancies. There's a cost to filling those positions. And some of the challenges we heard, they were driven by, you know, lack of awareness, a misalignment, as was mentioned before, between training and industry demand, and geographic and infrastructure barriers like housing, childcare, transportation. And what we found is we have very strong programs all across the state, but they can often operate in kind of disconnected pockets rather than a coordinated system. So without alignment, in these investments in education and training don't consistently translate into employment outcomes, which is the vision of AWIB. Our vision is to build those connections that put Alaskans into good jobs. Go to the next slide. So more of what we heard from industry is that employers need more industry-specific training aligned to those real jobs. They need expanded apprenticeship and work-based learning and better visibility into upcoming trained workers. So what that pipeline is. We heard that employers are willing to participate in internships, apprenticeships, and training design and help shape that curriculum and career pathways. And that's really a key to all of this when we talk about it, is we hear these things a lot, but without employer buy-in, we don't always have the success that we're looking for in some of these programs. So those top challenges, again, are workforce shortages, lack of career awareness, and limited relocation and retention of workers. Next slide. So career awareness as a core gap. It was identified as a consistent statewide need. And students around the state, they just often lack awareness of what those high demand careers are, or even a full understanding of the training pathways and what the steps are to get to those high demand careers. So career guidance efforts, they exist, but it's not consistent statewide, and it's not necessarily always connected to training and employment pathways. Next slide. So a strong workforce system connects education to the training, to the work-based learning, to employment, and then to advancement in the employment. And that's a piece I think is all often left off when we talk CTE, is what is the what does advancement look like, and what's the visibility like for people in that system? So those pathways, again, have to be aligned to industry demand. They have to provide clear next steps at every stage and avoid those dead ends at training. So career guidance to us, it's a entry point in the system. It's not the end. And next slide. And when we talked about this, we talked, where does the system break down today? And again, it's often around alignment. Students receive guidance, but they don't always have a clean handoff or a clean transition into training, and it's not always connected to that job that they were talking about. A student may enter a welding class or a pre-apprenticeship class, but then they can't get connected with, you know, the apprenticeship or the contractor or where that job is. So they're not always directly aligned or coordinated across regions. And conversely, employers sometimes lack that visibility into that pipeline. So where are the best spots for that? AFTEC is a great example. They have great relationship, a great record of handoffs and employers that are directly recruiting straight from AFTEC. There's a lot of other good examples around the state, but that's one that often comes to mind when we talk about these pipelines and employer handoff. Next slide. So what Alaska already has, like I said, AFTEC partnerships, Alaska Native Corporation workforce programs, Title 144, CTE and K-12 models, active employer engagement they're willing to participate, and our existing programs and funding streams that we have. When I mentioned earlier, there's 570 workforce boards around the country. When I talk with our partners and colleagues in other states, they often mention just how bad things have gotten with, you know, federal funding declining, and they're struggling to keep their programs going. Something Alaska has that has been very strong and consistent over the years is the state training and education program. That has been a consistent source of funding for workforce training in the state. It's something workforce partners can rely on, and it's kept training consistent since 1989 for decades. And can you go to the next slide? So again, from the Alaska Workforce Future Report, from our convening, things we determined that a strong system requires is, again, that alignment across education, workforce, and industry, and those employer-driven pathways that are tied to real jobs, work-based learning opportunities like apprenticeships and internships, and then clear, stackable credentials and career progression. And then data-driven decision-making and outcome tracking, those support services, those wraparound services for childcare, transportation, housing, and then regionally driven workforce solutions. Each plan differs region to region. That is one of our largest challenges as a single statewide board, is creating a unified plan, but making sure each region is tailored to their specific regional and industry needs. Next slide. So some of the big takeaways is, you know, Alaska has strong programs, but like others have mentioned, they often operate in silos, or they're not aware that there are other people doing similar work or often better in some circumstances. So career guidance and CTE, they're a critical entry point to the workforce system, and we have employers who are ready to engage, but we just need better alignment. And a coordinated data-driven system improves outcomes for all Alaskans and all resident workers. With that, happy to take any questions, the committee.
Yeah, thank you, Director Kraft. And I don't know if the glacier on your last slide is an allegory for it's a slow-moving thing, or it's receding.
Or it's melting. Yeah.
Hopefully that's just a beautiful picture. We do have a lot of questions here in the committee. I think Co-Chair Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshoot. And I'll just ask one question, and maybe I can get another one after everyone has had a chance. But when you have what a strong system requires on page 12, perhaps there's another bullet that I heard mentioned earlier from the department today, and that is it requires trained instructors. They gave an example today in the healthcare field in the Yukon area, Kuskokwim. They do not have an instructor who knows about or has the credentials to teach anatomy, physiology. And so I don't know if your organization keeps a list of, instructors, or, if someone could go to you, and how does someone share a need such as that? Is that something that you know that there are strong instructors and it's not on this list? Or what is your thoughts about that?
Director Kraft?
Yes, Co-Chair Story, that's a great point. CTE instructors around the state is a massive gap for us. We hear that from all of our training providers. And lack of CTE instructors, often they get better opportunities in the field they're working and then take those jobs. So just keeping a pipeline of CTE instructors is a huge challenge. Right now, we're currently working on updating the AKLNG pipeline workforce plan. And in that plan, what we've asked for is just that, is a list of every training provider around the state, current CTE instructors, contact information, and basically just a Rolodex of who those instructors are, who you can contact, who's working on what. And so regardless of the other points of the plan, we think that'll be a very valuable tool for instructors, employers, and industry.
Follow-up?
Do you know if the University of Alaska system offers a credential CTE program for instructors?
Director Kraft?
Yes, Co-Chair Story. I think we have Sheena Marcel on the line. She might be better positioned to answer that question. She's a program coordinator with AWIB.
Yes, Coordinator Marcel. Could you unmute yourself, put yourself on record? And we're wondering about UA programs to credentialed CTE instructors. Do you know if that exists?
Good morning. For the record, I'm Sheena Marcel, Program Coordinator for AWIB. The connection between upskilling instructors in school districts is more being driven by industry, industry associations. I know that the Carpenters Union specifically is working with a lot of different districts to share curriculum and upskill the instructors and assess what each program may need.
Follow-up. So has there been any discussions with the university system about the lack of this and how they can be training others for this? People who are out there doing the work and maybe want to switch to being an instructor in a school district, and would be so helpful if there was a list of needs of instructors around the state. So I visualize AWIB having a board of career tech instructors needed, that someone could go and look online and then maybe what is credentially needed in order to qualify to be able to do be an instructor.
Ms. Marcel?
I would, through the chair, I would say that is something that we are working on with building our database. Some of the things that will be coming, we're working on evaluating CTEPs and their individual classes and being able to see what equipment each program has, in addition to evaluating instructor skills. I think that is probably the next part of building our database, and that connector, that bridge between industry and education. You know, as I talk to our apprenticeship programs, they are asking what instructors are in each community, what equipment each community has, so that they can better support them. Or, you know, as they're getting rid of equipment, send it to one of the schools. And so there's a lot of moving pieces, and it does all start with data and being able to find all the data and collect all the data. I'm working with Brad and his team, and essentially it's a very grassroots interviewing process around the entire state, talking to school districts and speaking with employers.
I just want to follow up with the comment as well. So many wonderful industry professionals are coming over and working in the CTE field, and it's incredibly powerful. And yet, I just want to say, speaking a language doesn't mean you can teach the language. Being able to build a table doesn't mean you can teach how to build a table. So there's a disconnect there that really highly qualified, experienced people are probably going to be great teachers, but there's just a little bit that we need to make sure they have a certain skill set for the classroom as well. So I guess that's what I'm looking for. Is there anything like that out there?
You know, that might be a better question for Mr. Billings, because I know that the credentialing side for new instructors coming into CTE, you know, they get waivers and as they're developing their skills to be better classroom teachers. I believe there are several classes that they need to take.
Okay. I think we can pursue that another time. Thank you so much. We have a question from Representative Schwanke, and then Dybert, and then Eichheit, and we have about 4 more minutes before we need to move on. So, Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute. I'll try to be quick. Mr. Kraft, I see in a couple different slides here there's concepts of we really need alignment, and that is the solution. We really need alignment. But I'm going to ask you, what advice can you give to a full suite of K-12 educators and leaders to ensure that our graduates are actually truly prepared for the rigor of the workforce? Because my personal concern is that intense focus on skill development actually does not help us develop the strong young adult that we need that has attitude, commitment, grit, and follow through, soft skills.
It's again, Dirk Kraft for the record, through the chair, Representative Schwanke, that is a very important point. One of the grants we administer is We Owe a Youth. And one thing we always hear from our training providers and from industry is just the lack of soft skills and other skills from youth when they show up. So there's training that is one part of it, but the other components, you know, financial literacy, digital literacy, a lot of other components and soft skills, and just being able to work in a group is something that is always lacking from some of these programs and something we have to actively work towards.
Thanks.
Okay. We'll go next to Representative Dybert.
Good morning, Director Dirk, through the co-chair. Thank you for being here. I think my question is on slide 11, and I'm just curious if you could expand more on the Alaska Native corporations and just how they're helping out with the work across Alaska, and maybe just touch a little bit on the training that they're providing for Alaskans, in especially rural Alaska. Thank you.
Director.
Yes, Representative Dybert through the chair. So as I mentioned, we administer WIOA. It's the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Grant that includes federal workforce programs. I might be getting the title wrong. I believe it's Title 144 of WIOA has separate tribal entity funding in there that they administer. And so we try to work jointly with those programs that they administer independently to make sure we're in alignment and that our programs are complementing each other. So we do sometimes get Alaska Native Corporation grants applications through STEP or WIOA, but they often have their own independent funding sources that through WIOA and other sources that we try to complement, and we also try to make sure we're in alignment with what the industry demand is that has been determined by the board.
Follow up. Yeah, thank you, co-chair. Through the chair to Director Dirk, thank you for that. I just wanted to just really iterate your words that these programs have kept training consistent for decades and provided workforce for jobs here in Alaska.
Thank you, Representative Dybert. And we'll go now to Representative Eichheit for the final question on this section.
Thank you, Co-Chair Himshoot. I think this is for, through the co-chair, through for Director Kraft. I'm looking at slide 8. Career awareness is a core gap. And you've identified in this slide deck several flat tires that need changing. And career awareness, I graduated from high school in 1979, and I was at a large high school, and we had a computer, one computer in the whole school, and it was in the guidance center, and I took an assessment to see what kind of careers I was suited for. So I became slowly aware of career awareness, but it is so hard for me to understand after all these years, and we keep talking about build Alaska, great jobs in career and technical trades, that career awareness is still a core gap. So what are we as a state doing? When are we going to change this flat tire, I guess? That's the question. Thank you.
Director Kraft.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Eichheit, that is another great point. Career guidance was one of the top things that came out of our convening. It's brought up over and over when we talk about building these pipelines in Alaska. And a pipeline's not something we can just build reactively. It's something we have to build and let it mature. So when we talk career guidance, I don't always think about just someone sitting in the classroom walking someone through what their career options are. It's really a holistic experience that includes work-based work experiences, quality work experiences, and work-based learning that can include things like a youth apprenticeship or a pre-apprenticeship, internships, and the board has conceptually talked about what we've called the Alaska Future Ready workforce program that would include some pre-apprenticeship and youth apprenticeship programs and curriculum that could involve youth. So it would be a more support some of those programs we already have in schools and some of these people that are already doing some of this career guidance work, and Department of Labor, Division of Employment Training Services, and Dee is going to present after me about our career guidance program that we have in Department of Labor. But separately, we're always looking at how do we strengthen career guidance in the state? How do we build pipelines that these other states are doing very well? I like to use Wisconsin as a great example of a youth apprenticeship program, which is separate from a regular registered apprenticeship, but these youth can build hours, I think up to 400 hours towards a registered apprenticeship before they've even graduated high school. There's a graduation ceremony from those apprenticeships, and people can see that success. So career guidance is multifaceted. There's a lot of different aspects to career guidance, and I think it's very low-hanging fruit for the state to improve on. Thank you.
Thanks for those thoughts. Follow-up?
Yeah, just a comment. You know, I was in Wisconsin for 30 years, so I always enjoy the shout-out, excellent education system. But I hope that we can fund these solutions so that we can actually execute them and get the tire changed.
Thank you for that wrap-up comment. Of course, I'm just going to add one last thing. I also graduated in Iowa a few years after Representative Eichscheid. And I used a little metal wire, and I answered questions, and I stuck the wire through the holes, and it left me with two career choices that I am not going to announce here. I was a fairly antisocial teenager, so offline I will tell you what those two career choices were, because it stuck with me forever, and I did not pursue either one. Okay, here we go. Director Kraft and Coordinator Marcel, thank you so much for your time this morning, and it was kind of short notice getting you guys here. Really appreciate you stepping up. It's given us a lot to think about. We're going to move on now to Director Paloma Harbor with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and Director Monica Goyette with the Department of Education and Early Development. We're going to take about 15 minutes or so on this presentation. We're really glad you're here. Thank you. Please put yourselves on record and begin your presentation.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, Paloma Harbor with the Director for the Division of Employment and Training Services with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
And for the record, Monica Goyette with Department of Education and Early Development. I'm the Director for Innovation and Education Excellence.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Hemshute and Story, for this opportunity to come and speak with you about our career guide project. This is a new career guidance, as was mentioned, is not a new concept, and the need for career guidance in the state is not a new concept. It's existed for a while. It's been an initiative on different organizations over time. But there has been a lack of consistency, especially in the funding model. A lot of times it's a competitive grant, so there's an initiative for a few years, and then the funding goes away, and the resources dwindle. Since I started with the department in my current role, the commissioner has emphasized our need to raise career awareness among young Alaskans and in order to help meet workforce demands. And this was further emphasized during the convening that Director Kraft spoke to earlier. At the same time, the Department of Education and Early Development was charged with ensuring that their career and technical education efforts were aligned with Alaska's workforce needs. And we're hearing similar feedback from organizations on the need for career guidance through other events they were attending. So our commissioners got together and decided to partner on a career guide initiative using our existing resources. At around the same time frame, the Alaska Association of School Boards had been attending an event and became aware of the Rooted Alliance model, and they brought it to our attention. And that is the model we used to implement our initiative. The Rooted Alliance is a philanthropic organization focused on supporting rural high school seniors. Alaska was the fifth state to join the alliance, and the Rooted program is similar to previous career guide efforts that have taken place in the past, but it promotes a high degree of accountability with some flexibility in how we actually get the work done. As I mentioned, our initiative leverages our existing resources. So for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, we have the workforce data that was mentioned earlier. I meant to tell you that at the beginning in response to Representative Story's inquiry. We have the Trends article, or Trends magazine, that comes out monthly. The 10-year occupational projections is released in October, so the October issue. Then in January, we release the 2026 job forecast, so that's kind of a shorter-term job outlook. And in February, we release the non-resident workers information. And all of those help inform where could we better meet the workforce needs in Alaska. So I just wanted to mention that. Sorry. So we have the workforce data. So that's what we can bring to the table at the Department of Labor, along with strong partnerships with employers and training providers across the state. So, for example, we just launched monthly lunch and learns for our students to join, where we can highlight high-demand occupations. We're bringing in an employer and a training provider so they can speak to where can you go for training in Alaska to meet these high-demand occupations. And we had the first one was focused on commercial driver's licenses, and the next one that we're doing in April is focused on the teacher apprenticeship initiative so that we can raise awareness on that effort. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education is assisting this career guide initiative with training to our career guides on FAFSA completion, the importance of it, how to help families with it. They have helped us in hosting family FAFSA nights. They also have trained our career guides on the Alaska Performance Scholarship and provide the Alaska Career Information System that is used to assist with student career exploration. The Department of Education and Early Development has really assisted with the coordination of the initiative as a whole and the professional development of our career guides. They actually developed a career guide class for all of our existing career guides, and it will be used and shared with others that are looking as we look to expand the model. Thank you. Okay. This slide shows the direct career guide providers, which include the Bristol Bay Career and Technical Education Consortium, serving four school districts, the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, serving two school districts, and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, serving two school districts. Overall, that's a total of 20 schools and 208 seniors that are being served through this initiative. Before we move on, I do want to mention, as I said before, this isn't brand new. Sea Alaska Heritage is an experienced partner. They came in to the partnership having already provided career guidance for a couple years, and they developed a wonderful curriculum for schools to use, and they've opened it up for anyone to alter and make it a whole course. So it can be a whole course, a work readiness course that any high school teacher can offer. And it can be altered. So one of the nice things about it is culturally affirming. So it talks about your values, your cultural background, and how that can guide where you go in your career. And then it can be altered. So this was specifically, obviously, Sea Alaska is more Southeast Alaska, but we have different cultures across the state. So I wanted to give that a shout out. Sorry. All right, next slide. This slide explains more about the services that each career guide provides to the students they're serving. They provide one-on-one planning. So as mentioned, I think most students do some work readiness, career awareness activity in some class at some point during their high school career. and it goes in one ear and out another, or unless there's that committed one-on-one discussion with a student, it's overwhelming or they're not necessarily focused. So that's one of the nice things that this model provides, is that one-on-one discussion to really hash out, what are you interested in? One of the things Southeast Alaska Heritage pointed out was they were doing their program, and the student said, I don't know. I have no idea. Nobody in my family works. I don't know what I want to do. And they're like, well, think about what do you watch? And it was a forensic science TV show. And they're like, I would like to do that. You know, they were able to work with the student to think outside of what they'd seen, maybe locally, to brainstorm alternatives and then lead them in that direction. So, sorry.
No.
I went off the
excellent
off script there for a minute. as we mentioned, FAFSA is key. I mean, financial planning's like the last step that the career guide works on with the student. And completing that FAFSA is critical because you can't even get the performance scholarship without completing the FAFSA. And yet in Alaska, we have a very low completion rate. So we're trying to, like I said, we try and do FAFSA, family FAFSA nights, because a lot of times it's the parent that's the link we need to make to get that completed. So
we can go Trevor, ahead. I just wanted to ask briefly, they simplified the FAFSA. It had a horrible rollout. Mm-hmm. But apparently it worked. Mm-hmm. After the horrible rollout, it's actually much simpler now. Is it true that it takes an hour?
I have just recently done it, and I would say it didn't take me a full hour, I don't think. But I've done it before, so I was able to roll over some information.
Right. Representative Underwood.
Through the chair, quick question. When was the new rollout? I'm just asking because my senior, I had to do this with him a few years ago, and it was awful. It was not easy.
Through the chair, Representative Underwood, I believe it was a year and a half ago?
I think two cycles ago.
Okay. Two cycles ago.
I missed the good, easy
yeah.
one.
Well, the nice thing, and it does require, the simpler version takes it directly from your IRS tax return, so you don't have to re-enter a lot of information. Again, if you don't necessarily have an IRS tax return, you probably have to key in a lot of information, so it would take longer.
But to be clear, Alaska is 54th in the nation because territories mm-hmm. where we have been, and we've been that way for a long time, so we have a lot of room for improvement. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the simplified form and your extra efforts to get people connected will result in us moving up in those rankings. So,
yeah.
Co-chair Story.
Thank you. Chair, I just wanted to make the comment that the FAFSA is so important, and it is the reason why APS requires the FAFSA to get this, apply for the scholarship, is because it is millions of dollars that our students can get. Mm. And we are, I don't remember the number, but it was almost like $5 million that we were returning back to the federal government, which they distribute to other states. Mm. And lots of times when students fill out their FAFSA, that's, you know, they will get a notice from the federal government saying this is the amount of money you qualify mm-hmm. for. And then a student for the first time realizes that, hey, I've got some money to go to school. They might not think they have any. Mm-hmm. And so it is free money, so to speak. I mean, it is. It's a grant. You don't have to pay it back based on your income. And so it is critically important that the word is out there and there is help to fill out the FAFSA, and I'm glad the Alaska Post-Secondary Commission has those family nights. Thank you.
And I'll just add, there's a downside, too. UA system requires the FAFSA for enrollment, and if you already know you won't qualify, it's just a hurdle for some kids. But, it's always worth checking because we leave, what is it,
millions.
6 million or something. Maybe it's even more than that Alaska leaves on the table. It was a compelling number anyway.
Yes.
A federal assistance for higher education, which includes technical training, and it's not just university. So, okay. Sorry. A little bit of a bird walk. Let's get back on track. Apologies.
Okay. No worries. Thank you. It's a good conversation. So next slide. Another, the great thing about the rooted model is its diversity in who can be a career guide. So it can be that school counselor if they have the capacity, or a teacher, or another staff member in the school. A lot of times it is an ad hoc staff member because there isn't the committed resource, right, in a school. It can also be the local career and technical education provider, whether that's a consortium model like Bristol Bay, or the local regional training center like NACTEC in Nome, Northwest Alaska Career and Technical Education Center in Nome. It can also be a tribal organization, as we mentioned previously, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, but also it could be Kowarik. We partner with them. We have some grants with them. It could be AVCP, Alaska Village
Council Presidents.
Thank you, Council Presidents. Or it can be a state agency, such as the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Truly, the most important thing is that the career guide has a heart for serving youth and helping them understand the options available to them without overwhelming them, right? When it comes to scalability across Alaska, this flexibility in the service model, mixed with the central coordination provided by the Department of Education and Early Development and the Rooted Alliance data system, is key because each region and location has different partners with varying capacity to take on this work.
Alrighty. For the record, my name is Monica Goyette. So how did we do? We're in year two, so we're going to show you some of our results from year one. And year one was 197 seniors in that cohort. So our overall satisfaction across stakeholders was very strong. 85% of participating students reported being satisfied with their career guide. 100% of career guides reported feeling valued and supported within the model. And 94% of administrators or counselors reported satisfaction with the career guide's work. So we've been talking about the free application for federal student aid. And so as Co-Chair Hemshoot pointed out, Alaska is the lowest in FAFSA completion. So on this graph, you can see the national average by year kind of ranges between 45 and 55% completion rates. There are some states like Texas that requires it as part of graduation. Alaska statewide in 2025 had 29% of students complete the FAFSA. And in year one for us, we were at 41%, which was 12% above the state. But I believe that we can do much better on this. And one of the things we're able to look, we track our data in, we call them key performance indicators in the Rooted model, and FAFSA is one of those. And we can look across our career guides and across our programs and see how completion rates are going with each guide, with each program, in each region. And we had real disparities between completion rates. And so we're really into continuous improvement. Like what we're always rooting out, what we can do better in the Rooted model. And so we started talking about it a lot. And some of our guides had a belief that rural families would not complete it. So if we believe that rural families were not completed, how does that impact the service that we provide? So we really had to challenge our bias and say, but why? So only families in this regional area would not complete it, but rural families in this regional area are willing to. So we believe that we can do much better in this area. I'm really excited to see how we're going to do in year two in this area. All the career guides listening out there, pressure's on. So one of the things we want to show you what data we can track through this, and we really want to say there's only 197 students represented here, so we don't want to draw any real trends or patterns or conclusions about things because the N is so small. But as we scale, we're going to show you the number of districts that are looking to join next year. As we scale, we might really be able to gather some meaningful insights on what students are choosing. So this circle graphic shows you the percentage of students, what pathway they chose. And again, we support all pathways. If students want to go directly into the workforce, if they want to go into the military, if they want some vocational training, they want a two-year college or four-year college. And we segment that out within our data tracking system. And so you can see here 8% chose direct workforce, 3% the military, 23% career training, 2% chose or 13% chose a two-year college, and 28% chose a four-year college. To me, the most important data on here, and for us, our just charge, is that 25% of kids that were undecided when they left us. Our goal is 100% have a plan, and so this is one of the areas we need to get better at.
I want to jump in with a quick comment. Tennessee has a great program. It's called Enroll, Enlist, Employ.
Yes, I love the ease.
And there's a whole thing about, I think, having a post-secondary plan for every kid at graduation. I've looked at that a little bit. What bothers me is in Alaska, we need something to capture subsistence is a life path. And so that's not reflected in these terms. And so every bit is valuable. So how do we do that in Alaska? We're different from other places, and being able to provide for your family is absolutely a career choice. So how would you respond to that?
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute, for that question. It's an excellent question. We are segmenting students that choose a subsistence lifestyle in workforce. We had a lot of conversations in our year one through our career guides, and really see Alaska Heritage Institute led these conversations around how we want to reflect that and really honor that with students. And so it is reflected within the workforce training. So we can break this down even more, and we'll show you some of our next slides, how we can get even deeper within these pathways what students are choosing.
I'm so grateful it's part of the conversation. I just want a workforce without training. People who provide for their community and for their families, it's a lifetime of training. So it's not exactly, but I get where you're going, and I'm glad it's being considered.
Director Harbor. Thank you for the record, Paloma Harbor again. And one of the things I meant to mention when I was talking about the flexibility of this model is that we were able to do that. We were able to add what we've called the provider track to the selections the students can make. Like, that's what I want to do. And that's valid, and that's valued. So we need to reflect that.
Okay, thank you.
So as I was saying, within each pathway, we can segment students out even farther. And again, the N is on this is so small. We would not want to make a conclusion that 27% of our students in the state are going into the health professions. This is a really small number, basically times 28 times 2 since there was 197. So that's how few kids there are. But imagine if we had 2,000 kids in this career guide model and in the project, we could start to glean some trends, and we could drive professional development. If we could see high occupations that we know are going to be emerging, we could say, and kids aren't choosing that through training options or through direct workforce entry, then the following year when we're doing our lunch and learns with students, we could have more opportunities for them to learn about the training and the workforce opportunities. So I'm really excited about the data potential through this program. So here you can see what is segmented through career training programs, what students chose. Again, a very small N. This, to me, is one of the areas that if a career guide is laying awake at night, I hope this is what they're worrying about. And these are the students we really desperately need to dig in. This is over 100% because they could pick multiple variables that were a barrier. Students reported, they filled out a survey, what were the barriers to them not being able to make a decision. So that's why this goes over 100%. But this is very good for us because it can help us understand they need more assistance with the financial plan. They need more assistance with understanding, like, what are their passions? What are their abilities? What are their skills? So maybe doing a career interest inventory, ensuring that all kids do that to help them kind of narrow down what they should be focused on. So this is really valuable data for us. So as a pilot project, we are just laser focused on what we can do better as we expand. And so these are our four themes coming out of year one that we really worked on this year: strengthening support for our workforce-bound students, expanding resources for still deciding students, deepening our impact of career exposure opportunities, especially for kids in remote rural Alaska. They only get to see the jobs that are in their village sometimes. And so how, and oftentimes that's what you choose, but there's only, you know, one village police officer. There's only one person that's going to be able to do heavy equipment, you know, plowing the airport. So we need to expand and let them see other occupations that are outside of their communities. And we need to improve communication with stakeholders. We had principals and superintendents. We have great relationships with the district we're working with. They were really candid, and they were like, we hear the career guide's doing great work, but we don't know. And so this year we said, if you're in the building, you got to stop by and see the principal and tell them what you're doing when you're in there. So that was some low-hanging fruit for us. So our goal is sustainability and scalability. And so this year, these are our partners. Southeast Island just joined us this spring, so they weren't represented in our cohort of senior data. But we have all of the Southeast school districts are looking at joining. We're in the process right now of signing MOUs with several of them. Some of them are still deciding and learning more about it. There is a new CTE consortium, the Alaska Regional Career and Technical Interior Consortium, and they are planning on joining next year. And so, again, it is their job, the district, to find the staffing costs, whether that's with a tribal entity or they're finding it themselves. And we provide the infrastructure and the model. So we really believe this is a sustainable because it's not tied to a direct funding source. So with that, we're happy to answer questions.
I think we might have some. Let's start with Representative Schwanke.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, I wanted to ask you, I feel like we're constantly reinventing the wheel on some of this stuff, and I appreciate your passion. A lot of great information there. I am concerned about the amount of money that's been spent on the project, and it's affected thus far less than 3% of our high school graduates, so there's 8,000 in the state that graduate every year. So I'm glad to see ARDC is in there as for next year. I'm curious, Where's the discussion surrounding things like ASVAB? I know it's still used a lot across school districts to try to hone in some ideas on kids and career exploration in the military arena. And then second question is, you never mentioned the word council or not. I didn't hear it unless I missed it. But it seems like, how are you reaching all school districts as far as just trying to let them know that there is curriculum available that was developed through this and just that reach to every single district?
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Schwanke. So I did happen to mention counselors. It was very quickly. I know we went kind of quickly through the model, but the nice thing about this model is anybody can be the career guide, and it can be a counselor or another staff member or instructor, teacher at the school. As far as raising awareness of this and the curriculum specifically, Southeast Alaska Heritage Institute presented the curriculum. I believe it was at one of the conferences. I can't remember which one. To share, and it's available in the key. I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's the, isn't it? The Alaska. I'm going to not know what I'm talking about, so I'll just stop with that. There was something else you mentioned. I'm sorry.
ASVAB?
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't, through the chair.
Because we have two female voices presenting. If you could, put your name on record when you speak.
For the record, Paloma Harbor again. So we don't, through the chair, Representative Schwanke, we don't see the ASVAB results. And we looked into that to see if our research and analysis section might have that kind of information. We don't. But as Monica mentioned, getting that interest survey would be very beneficial because, as mentioned here, some of the students were overwhelmed by options and didn't really know what might be a good place to lean. And I think the ASVAB, I took it. I thought it was great with the insights.
Quick follow-up? Yeah, I appreciate that. I just wanted to make sure that was kind of included, especially when you have a pretty large group of kids that are still undecided. I do know a lot of our rural kids do take the ASVAB, and so it gives them a real kind of opens their eyes a little bit to opportunities. And then I just wanted to add one final thing, and I appreciate what Rep. Hemshute mentioned about subsistence, but subsistence is not a lifestyle when it comes to making money and supporting a household. Subsistence is a very expensive thing to do. And I want to throw it out there that individuals that are interested in following their traditional ways and subsistence providing is something that all Alaskans should be considering. But career pathways are what helps you afford to do that. And so I needed to put that on the record.
Okay. We have a question from Co-Chair Story.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. I appreciate both of you being here today through the chair. I had a couple of questions. My first one is it's focused on seniors. Mm-hmm. So many people I know when they are juniors, they are doing more exploration. They're filling out their FAFSA because they'll know their financial information. They're applying different places. So I'm so curious that this focuses on seniors and not juniors. And I would like to understand that, please.
Through the co-chair, Hemshute to co-chair Story, this is Monica Goyette for the record. It's an excellent question. Rooted Alliance, the model is that we work with seniors. And the career guide model, the way that they've established it, and it is free. It's a philanthropic organization. So their model, we do not pay any costs for it. They envision a caseload of 150 students to one career guide, but most of their career guides are on a single site. We lowered that quite a bit because of the travel out to remote rural sites. And so even though the model focuses on seniors, when our career guides are there and have time, they push down into building relationships with students within the high school. So if they're there offering a career exposure opportunity, all the students are getting access to that. But our focus is, and what I always say is, this is the floor. If a child does not have a plan in their senior year, our goal is to ensure that they graduate with high school with a plan. And the conversation always goes way beyond the junior year. Then people start saying, well, you should be doing career exploration in middle school. And yes, we agree 100%. Very quickly, the model becomes cost prohibitive because if you're talking, our career guides are working with like 75 students. So if you start bringing that down in grades, very quickly, the scalability of it becomes even more challenging. So we are just the floor. This is just ensuring at the very end that we make sure that our kids have a transition. Our commissioner always says our success is measured not by high school graduation rates, but how students do after they leave us.
I love that perspective. Did you want to add something, Director Harbor?
Through the chair, co-chair Story, again, for the record, Paloma Harbor, I would just say that there are other efforts. So the career guide, the one-on-one planning, like Monica said, is to ensure that they leave high school with a plan, a very specific plan. But there are other efforts. We work with Alaska Resource Education to bring awareness on high-demand occupations to students. And there are other career awareness efforts in middle school, in early high school. It's just a matter of what we're able to do to ensure, as Monica said, that the seniors have that plan as they leave.
Okay, thanks. Follow up?
Yeah, and this is another question. You talked about your lunch and learns, which sound really great, bringing a person from the industry in. Where do you target having the lunch and learns? Are they also valuable virtually where students can come in virtually? Director Harbor.
Thank you, through the chair, co-chair Story. Those are 100% virtual. They are Teams meetings, so students can attend from anywhere. We have now posted them online on our website, our career exploration website, so that and we shared the QR code for students to register with other interested parties. This came up at the school board, the state school board meeting earlier, and they recommended DJJ, Division of Juvenile Justice, would probably want to participate. So we shared the information with them. So it is open to anybody.
Follow up. One more question, please. Yeah. And then you commented on this, I think. Do we have about 4,000 graduating seniors a year? That's kind of what comes to my mind.
8,000,
sorry. And so when we're looking at the slides, I appreciate you saying this is 175 students. So we have, scalability and, it would be interesting to know how you plan to build awareness among other districts to participate in this. Just curious your thoughts about that.
Dr. Goyette.
Through co-chair Hemshute to co-chair Story, this is Monica Goyette for the record. So deeded contracts with an external vendor to one of their primary things is expansion. And so really to Representative Schwanke's question earlier about how are we getting information out. So he goes to all the conferences in the fall. We talk to superintendents about it, and we are working. Alaska Association of School Boards has a community of practice for career guidance. So we are working very hard to make sure that all districts know about this opportunity.
Okay, and we have quite a few people in the queue here, so I'm going to ask folks to keep their questions pretty concise. Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hemshute. Through the Co-Chair, thank you for this information. We have talked in this committee before wondering what happens to students after they graduate. So given this career awareness program, is there any plans to do any post-graduation surveys, say 1, 3, or 5 years down the road, to see what participants think of this program after the fact, time fact, and also where did they end up doing? What did they end up doing?
Okay. Director Harbor.
Thank you. For the record, Pomo Harbor, through the chair, Representative Eichheit. We haven't talked about that, doing a survey after the fact, but it's definitely something we're capable of doing. Our research and analysis group does have data sharing agreements. We have a data sharing agreement, so it's definitely something we could do looking into the future.
Okay. Representative Elam.
Thank you. I appreciate all the presentations just in general today. One of the things that I guess I have seen along the way is there's no shortage of programs. There's no shortage of things that we're all working on and everything, but how do we tie those together to kind of help bring that together for our students, for our workforce, and just kind of get the whole thing together and tied up?
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Again, for the record, Paloma Harbor, through the chair, Representative Elam. That's a great question. I think Director Kraft said it over and over again, we need alignment, we need to know what's going on, we need the information. One of the efforts they're working on right now is a database. I think coordinator, her name just escaped me, spoke to it. They're collecting all of this information. So I know, again, earlier when you were seeing the presentation on CTE, we know a sliver of what's going on in CTE. It'd be nice to have a database with the information for all CTE, right, and other programs. So we're actively working on collecting that information, compiling it. One of the other things in that Alaska's Workforce Future Plan that Director Kraft spoke to was a data dashboard. So the map that you showed Co-Chair Hemshute earlier is something that is on our minds of giving that out there so that you all as policymakers can see where are these things happening, and employers too can see where can I go to get employees that are trained in plumbing or whatever it is. So we're working on it. It's just not going to happen overnight.
Okay. Final question from Representative Dybert.
Thank you, through the co-chair. Mine is not necessarily a question for your presentation. Thank you for being here, but just like an overall thought from me on all the presentations and just something to think about. When I was in the classroom and I taught in elementary, third grade, oftentimes I saw when I was teaching math and science that our young girls or young students and mostly young girls didn't see themselves being successful in math and science and engineering around third. They mentioned it in third grade, mm-hmm. and they probably don't see themselves in these fields around fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And just listening to the presentation, I wish there was a way that Perkins can help our elementary students as well, because if they don't see themselves being in these fields starting at the young age, they don't, they don't go on to be interested in these fields. And then in one part of the presentation, I think it was Mr. Billings, that for Perkins funding, some districts don't have high schoolers, so Alaska is unique. I wish we could use that $20,000 in elementary schools where there are young students who could benefit from STEM opportunities and just building that base. But just something for Alaska to think about, not really necessarily looking for an answer, but if you have a thought, it'd be great to end the presentation on that. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Dr. Grant, did you want to comment?
Co-Chair Hemshoot, to Representative Dybert, not necessarily specifically about elementary. I did want to provide a little context on how far Perkins funding goes. Prior to working for the department, I worked in the Mat-Su School District. Mat-Su invests very heavily in career and technical education. In fiscal year 26, this year, they got $680,000 in Perkins funding. That would not cover the welding programs. So just for you to understand the scale, and Mat-Su is reporting on, they were in all clusters you could see, so they're probably reporting on all their programs that they're doing. But that is just a real sliver, and why the hesitancy on the department to say that paints a real picture of what's happening in CTE, because there is so much more money. I mean, school districts really, CTE to me is an intervention in high school. If you look at the graduation rates, it's like we should just be doubling down on it. So anyways.
Okay. I also had a question or two. The Rooted program, what does it – it says it's philanthropic. Does it come with a price tag? Are we paying for a membership or something?
Through to co-chair Hemshoot, this is Monica Goyette for the record. We do not pay a fee for it. It is a group of investors that wanted to support rural students with access to career guidance. And Alaska is the fifth state to join. And so they provide us professional development. They provide the curriculum materials. And they provide, through Salesforce, the data tracking system.
Super exciting. Okay, one more question. House Bill 57 last year included a feature of tracking people with publicly available data, I think at the 5-year mark. So that means we're going to need to start watching where our kids go right now so that in 5 years we can report on where they are, or what is the plan to fulfill that section of that bill?
Co-Chair Hemshoot, I'm not the expert on this, but our research and analysis section, so again, for the record, Paloma Harbor, with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So the department has our research and analysis section, and all that they will really need is the student data from the school districts, and then they will be able to crosswalk that with our unemployment data to see where are they working, what are their occupations, you know, that and do some reporting on it.
Okay. I think that will be helpful for all of us, and I hope that both the Department of Education and the Department of Labor will not feel constrained to what was in House Bill 57, but will take the spirit of it and give us useful feedback. And then I just wanted quickly to ask on slide four, you've got BBRCTE and the Department of Labor and SHI. Mm-hmm. What is the funding source here? What is the state putting in to the programs on this page?
To Co-Chair Hemshoot, this is Monica Goyette for the record. So Bristol Bay Regional Career and Technical Consortium, those four school districts pay for their staff, and those are career guidance counselors, so they are school district counselors. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development, in the governor's budget for the last few years, has had money dedicated to CTE. The legislature has appropriated that, and so we have done an RSA to the Department of Labor to pay for those staff members. There's two initially. We had a vacancy arrive earlier in the school year this year, and so there's right now we're just paying for one. And then Sea Alaska Heritage Institute pays for those career guides that go to those school districts.
Yeah, thank you. I just recall a request for funding for career guides in job centers. Can you speak to that? What happened with that? I think we didn't end up funding that. Is that correct?
Right.
Correct.
Okay. So, Co-Chair Hemshoot, this is Paloma Harbor for the record. There is funding. It's in, as Monica mentioned, in the Department of Education's budget that supports the one, currently one career guide in the Department of Labor Job Center in Fairbanks.
Do you have any information on how that? So that career guide is for people who've already graduated, I assume?
Co-Chair Hemshoot, that career guide is the one that is serving Galena City School District and Anana City School District.
I see, but they're housed at the job center.
That's correct.
Got it. Okay. I want to apologize for not getting to House Bill 358 today, but I feel like the context of everything that we've learned today is going to help us with that bill a great deal. So thank you for the latitude, Representative Elam, for us to skip it today. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I agree. This was very helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Goyette. Thank you, Director Harbor, for your presentation this morning. And I want to reiterate, everybody had to come together really quickly when we said we want to know these things. And so thank you so much for jumping to it. I had hoped to show those maps for everybody. Please do look on BASIS at the maps that we created. It's a starting point, and I think that if we had just a few more minutes, we were going to invite Director Billings to come up and talk about what's missing on that map, like what is it not showing us. But we've started that conversation. So we are going to wrap up our meeting today. Our next meeting is this Friday, March 27th at 8 a.m. in this room, Betty Davis Room 106. And we will hold a confirmation hearing for the appointee, I think it's the superintendent appointee, to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And then we will proceed to hear House Bill 261 and HJR 45. And then, of course, other bills previously heard could pop up. As a reminder, the committee's email address is house.education@akleg.gov. Public testimony can be sent to this address. Seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 10 a.m.